Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. Jesus calls Zacchaeus to ministry, to mission. And the people grumble, but Zacchaeus responds to Jesus' call, not only to provide Jesus with hospitality for that evening, but to give to the poor. It is an unexpected call and a full response on Zacchaeus' part. Now, in this sermon today, I'm going to share about my call to ministry. I'm not going to share everything because then I wouldn't have any illustrations for any other sermon. Or you'd be hearing the same story multiple times. Hopefully this will begin to give you a way to get to know me a little bit better, and I'm hoping I'm going to be able to get to know you better, especially in the next several weeks or several months. Hopefully we can get together in visiting you individually, but also in small groups. That's one of the things I've done in congregations, helps me to really get to know people fairly quickly. Now, hopefully there are elements in my call story that you can relate to and that might open the way for you to understand your call story better. For each of us has a call story to ministry. Ministry is given to all of us, not just to ordained people. Like Zacchaeus, the call might come unexpectedly. Now, unlike him, we don't need to go climb a tree. As a boy, I struggled to pronounce words correctly. And one early childhood memory is not being able to pronounce the word hospital correctly. And there was a hospital, not in our town, but in a nearby town. And I knew that if we took a certain route, we were going to pass the hospital, and my dad was going to ask me, what was that? And I would need to try to get the word out, and so I'd be practicing, but I never would quite get it right when we went past the hospital. And so I took speech lessons through elementary school, or at least the several years in elementary school. Back then, my spelling was just awful. They used to do this thing where if you got a word wrong, you had to write it out 10 times. I just about every word would be writing it out 10 times. Unfortunately, back then, there weren't any of these personal computers with those spell checks. Where was that when I was in fourth grade? Around the time I was 10, I began to have what, in retrospect, in reflection, might be the first calls to ministry. And in 10, I was raised in the Episcopal Church, and this was early. The priest in that church asked me to be part of the confirmation class. Most of the people being confirmed were actually adults, but he had me in that. And the prospect, however, of being a minister just totally terrified me. Actually, it was more than terror. It just seemed completely absurd. A minister, you see, speaks in public before an assembly of people. And not just once or once in a while. The minister gets up there and does it every single week. The idea that I'd be a minister just was impossible to wrap my head around. Whatever sparks of calling there were, these just were absurd, a notion that I just couldn't imagine, because I couldn't imagine speaking in public. Now, growing up, I especially loved history and social studies. I was a United Church, a U.S. history buff, and I really, in fact, even today, if you gave me a number from 1 to 45, I could tell you who the president was and when they were born, and for those who of those presidents who have died, when they died and when they served in office. And in college, my history, I was a history major. In seminary, my major was peace and justice studies, but I also did especially well in the church history and the biblical history and pastoral theology. Now, my dad was a Woolworth manager. Some of you know what Woolworth was back. It's gone now, but in fact, I think I can still kind of imagine in my head how each one of them smelled, because they all smelled the same, no matter where you went. And we lived in the Hudson Valley until I was about 10, and when I, just a few months after I got confirmed, he got transferred to Long Island, and then I was on Long Island for my teenage years, right through my first year of college. And then Dad left Woolworth, and we moved back to the Hudson Valley. As an aside, that priest in that church that we were on Long Island, he would preach his sermons walking up and down the aisle between the pews. And every once in a while, he would point to somebody and ask them a question. I never fell asleep in any one of his sermons, I can tell you that. And I was always terrified he would call on me, because I had been confirmed when I was 10 before I had moved there. So obviously I was one of the ones that get picked. After a while, I mean a few years, I started to realize he only picked on, you know, the ones that were in the vestry, which would be our deacons. Those were the only ones that got called upon. And I wasn't on the deacons. In my first year of college, I went to a community college. I began to become active in nonviolent social justice work. And now, more than 40 years later, nonviolent social justice work continues to be a core element of who I am and my call. As I said, I had a difficulty with pronouncing words and therefore speaking in public, and that led to being shy. And so I started sitting at the table of the group that I was in, and of course when somebody came up to them, I had to talk to them. And I did this more and more, and that led to my doing public speaking for social justice. And in fact, in some of the trainings, in fact, one of the training programs I went to, which was in Philadelphia, an element of that training, everyone, you take everybody from where the training was down into the center part of Center City, Philadelphia, and you bring some milk cartons with you, and you set up the milk carton, you stand on the milk carton, and you start doing street speaking. And so I ended up doing that, and because I was in that group for several years. And just to, there's like lots of details that I could get into the nonviolence training, but I got involved in an organization that was called the Movement for New Society, but it was very influenced by the Quakers. It was in Philadelphia. Went to their two-week training program when I was in college. That's where we did the street speaking. And after college, went back there, and they had a nine-month training program, and I ended up spending four years with that community, and totally involved in that community. They had land-trusted homes that still exist, that are still land-trust, and just sort of immersed in that community. But after a few years of doing that, I started to sort of burn out. I started to sort of hit sort of a brick wall. And I looked around and I said, who sustains doing this? And at the time, I'm in my early 20s. Who sustains doing this for a long time? And every one of the people that I looked at that was in their 60s and 70s and 80s that had been doing it for decades and decades was a person of faith. I thought, most of them being Quakers. And I started attending the Quaker meeting and became a Quaker and ended up looking at going to seminary. Now, the first time I looked at the catalog, I had a catalog. So, see, back then, you didn't go online. You actually got a physical catalog. And I was interested in peace and justice studies. And the only place you could do peace and justice studies in the 1980s was at a seminary. And so I look at this catalog, and it says, in order to do a peace and justice degree at Earlham, you have to take 4 Bible courses. And I took that catalog to our recycling bin, and that was that. But I was in the Friends Center, that's what it, where I was working, and in the evening, and I was actually putting together my application to do a program at Temple University in a program that was sort of in group dynamics. I took a couple of graduate courses at that program. I aced them. I was going to go into this program in their PhD program, and I just kept getting blocked. I just couldn't finish this thing. And I went into the library at the Friends Center. Of course, it's a Quaker library. And, of course, they had the ESR catalog, the Earlham School of Religion catalog. And I filled it out that time. And like 2 months later, I was in Indiana at the Earlham School of Religion. But I told them I was there not to become a pastor. I was really clear to them. I wasn't being a pastor, a teacher maybe, or some other kind of minister, not a pastor. The dean told me that he thought that I'd be a pastor in about 5 years. It took me 6, but I'm a little slow. After seminary, I ended up joining the staff of the Fellowship of Reconciliation, a peace organization. It's been around over a century now. And first I was doing their campus outreach program. And then they moved me into what I call Major Donor Pastoral Care. My actual title was Development Associate, but my job was to get in a plane and go visit the major donors around the country and sort of listen to them and hold their hands and give them pastoral care. And after doing that for several years, I think I came to the conclusion that if I was going to do pastoral care, there had to be an easier way than getting on a plane and going all over the country. And maybe there's a way to do pastoral care where it was more localized. And somebody said, yeah, that's a pastor. And so I went into the ordination route for the United Church of Christ, and that required me to do an internship. And after the internship, I put together my profile, which ministers do to circulate it, and nothing. I wasn't getting any interviews. And so I came up to New York. My parents are upstate New York, and met with an associate conference minister from this conference, but this is like in the 1990s. And he said, you know, I read your profile, and you have this much social justice work on your profile, and you have this much, I only need one hand, this much pastoral care experience. You're just scaring people away. I'm going to send you to this church without your profile. It's looking for an interim. Take the interview. and they hired me. And he said, and after a year, I'll send them your profile. And a year later, he sent the profile, and they were like, we're really glad we didn't get your profile. We wouldn't, but you're here now, and we're really glad. And that was in Ravenna, New York. Ravenna was my first experience of being a pastor, and I thought all those years of doing that major donor pastoral care would help me, and it was like a totally new experience what I was doing. And I remember, I'd done a lot of social justice work. I was really thrown aback by this congregation because they were really clear. The men, the deacons, served the elements for communion. But the deaconesses prepared communion and cleaned up, but they didn't serve. So I was like, okay, all right. But then after a while, I started going to this lunch. A group of women would get to lunch every Monday, and they invited me. Back then, it was before I was married. I guess they wanted to make sure I had one good meal each week. And I started to realize that there was nothing that was going on in that church that didn't get vetted by that group of women in the lunch. And partially because all of those deacons were either their kids or had gone to school where they were the school teacher, and none of the deacons messed with any of these women at the lunch. And they also took me around to do pastoral care visits, and that's how I first really learned how to do pastoral care visits. They loved the time they took me to a nursing home, and there was a woman who was 85 years old. Now, usually only one of them would, I'd go with one or two of them, but this time they all wanted to go. We went in two cars, and we visited this 85-year-old woman who proposed marriage to me, which they really loved. Later, I became a minister in the Poconos, and I helped put together a Stop the Hate campaign there, and was preaching about ending gender-based violence. Then we were in, from there, went to near Philadelphia, about around, I don't know if you know of Pottstown, but we were about an hour outside of Philadelphia, and at that point, first granddaughter Lisa came along, and at the time her mother was only 20 years old, so we really spent we basically raised Lisa ourselves, Catherine and I, and then Penny is now 6. I continue to do nonviolence training. In fact, yesterday I was in outside of Philadelphia. George Lakey gave a training. George Lakey is one of the leading nonviolence trainers in the world, and went through his program yesterday. Been trained as an interim minister, and one of the things that I have to say after 24 years, this is my 15th congregation, is that really, when it comes down to it, we can do all of the experience that you have in ministry, but it comes about in building relationships with the people and building connection, building caring for the people, loving the people. And so as I come to Norwich, I'm all in here. I'm moving here, I think. I get into my place and get a bed. I'm moving here, and I'm going to be active in the conference and the association, and I'm going to talk to the conference and probably move my membership here. So Zacchaeus was called to ministry by Jesus, and he responded by being all in. Zacchaeus did not come and say, I'll follow you, Jesus, a little bit. He said, here is half of my possessions. I'm all in as your follower. We are all called to ministry by Jesus. We are called to be all in. Let us all join together and commit ourselves to be all in for ministry as followers of Jesus Christ. Amen.